Universities, museums, and libraries have a long history of preserving cultural texts for the future. Things like newspapers and films have been restored and archived for future generations to learn from.
Today, podcasts are one of the most popular forms of media. The audience for the digital audio programs has exploded in recent years, with some getting millions of listeners every month. And one project is looking to get ahead of the game and preserve them before it's too late.
Jeremy Morris is in the studio with us now. He's assistant professor of media and cultural studies at UW-Madison and the founder of Podcaster, an effort to archive thousands of podcasts like Serial online. Jeremy, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
What made you pay attention to this issue that we need to start archiving podcasts?
There's been all this talk since Serial. I mean, you heard the theme song there of podcasts being in a kind of golden age of podcasts on all this great audio that's being produced. At the same time, I started looking back. I produced a podcast when I was in Montreal back in 2005, 2006. And I started looking back for some early copies, not just of my podcast, but other podcasts I was listening to, and realized it's a lot harder to find than you'd think. So started getting a little worried that as the industry gets... kind of grows up, that we're starting to forget about it, some of its history.
And you point out an analogy to the early days, say, of film or recorded audio, where I mean, you hear film buffs like, oh, if only we had a copy of, you know, blank.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I think we have about 90% of the silent films are hard to access or inaccessible now. I think I'm on a radio preservation task force, and they quote a number something like 75% of all the radio produced before 1975 is either lost to time or just otherwise inaccessible because people forgot to or didn't take notice of it and keep track of it properly.
What is it about having this new media form that's, you know, gets out there, it gets big, and nobody thinks to save the stuff right off the bat?
Well, I think it's because podcasts are so ubiquitous. I mean, right now they're pretty much free. You can go to iTunes and find, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of them. And people, I think that there's just going to be that kind of free access to it at all times, right? That those things are always going to be there. But if you've ever produced a podcast, you know, it's one thing if you're a radio station and you're making podcasts and you're used to saving media. But, you know, if there's a lot of people who are amateur podcasters who are producing these things who, you know, either stop paying their hosting bills or just get tired of making these things because it takes a lot of effort and work to make these things, right? And if they just give it up, what happens to those podcasts after they stop paying those hosting fees, right? Do they just disappear into the ether? Is that something we wish we had preserved so that we could go back to and kind of listen to it?
So if I'm thinking of films, I guess what I'd want to do is go back and find that original reel and preserve it and duplicate it and digitize it and do everything I can. What are the challenges in finding these older podcasts especially and making sure we have them in a way that's going to stick around?
Right. Well, the first part is finding them, right? So some of these older ones, and when I say older, I put that in quotation marks because we're talking about literally, you know, 10 years ago, which doesn't seem that old in terms of media. But if you think about some media formats that used to play audio, you know, real audio, some of these formats are not necessarily playable these days, right? So how you, migrate the format to what we use currently. And then thinking about, again, in the future, what are the ways in which people are going to want to access these things? Are we still going to be trying to access MP3 files, which is what most podcasts come in? There's also the problem of metadata. A lot of the database that I've built relies on metadata. You're able to search through the database and find keywords, you know, based, you know, if you want to find out what was happening in podcasts that's related to Trump or that's related to transgender rights or bathroom bill, right? These are all keywords you can search through the metadata. But the metadata is incredibly inconsistent because we have, you know, professional producers making podcasts and amateurs as well. So there's no real metadata standards.
So when you're on the hunt, say there's that podcast that you heard somebody out there doing in 2006, You know there was a name of it. And so what do you do next? How do you start?
Right. Yeah, no. So it's literally been a process of kind of digging around, trying to find out who has access to these files, where they go. One example I like to use is the example of Adam Curry, who was an MTV VJ and produced one of the first podcasts called The Daily Source Code, or at least what's considered one of the first kind of mainstream podcasts. He put a note out on his website a few years ago asking his fans, you know, does anybody have a copy of these files?
He didn't even have
a copy of his own show, right? So a lot of this is calling out to fans, calling out to people who were involved. I mean, the database that we're building right now, we're sort of we're starting now, or I guess we started about a year or two ago, tracking these things. So the database is much more robust from 2014 onward. I'm now trying to go back with research assistants and find out where some of these early podcasts exist. So
what form does your archive take now? Is it frozen in a vault in Norway, or what? What is it?
So it's a couple of parts. We have a website that users, public, can access, and they can search through the podcast themselves. There, they'll find links to audio streams that are currently available online. So if you were, you know, looking for Serial, you would see a link to a Flash player that will play the podcast from there. We're also taking a copy and keeping that locally here, and part of this UW2020 funding that we've received for the project is going to allow us to kind of partner up with the library and find kind of more long-term solutions. Right now, it's not on a server in Norway, but it is a server downstairs in the building here on the third floor. So we want to make that a bit more secure and a bit more long-term.
As we wrap up, I mean, if there are people out there listening saying, oh, I've got copies of an old podcast, or I'd like to help with this detective work, I mean, can you crowdsource this a little bit?
Yes, so that's part of why we're trying to do some of this outreach, is to get people sort of emailing me. We're also trying to build a researcher login interface where people can either upload tunes of their own, or suggest podcasts of their own, or suggest shows that they think should be archived for posterity.
And if they want to find it, it's podcast. I said podcaster, but it's spelled podcast R-E.
Yeah, so it's podcast R-E, short for research, but I'm Canadian as well, so I spell everything with R-E, so that's sort of my little... Or you could pronounce it French, you know, podcaster.
Podcaster.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for being with us. Good luck with the project.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Jeremy Morris, Assistant Professor of Media and Cultural Studies at UW-Madison, talking about the podcaster, or Podcast Ray, his new project that's archiving thousands of podcasts online.